I think that there is a huge need for community. Like, there are so many people that enter into recovery but have nowhere else to go. Like, their family continues to use.
Welcome back to Season 3 of Intrinsically Motivated, where we have conversations with experts in the field of addiction, recovery, and those personally affected by it as we seek to mobilize the church to replace addiction and mental health challenges with flourishing. On today's episode, we'll be sitting down with Brett Harmon. He's the Director of Misdemeanors and Pretrial Diversion with Southwest Virginia's Community Corrections. I'm Tucker Clements, audio engineer and editor for Uplift Appalachia, and this is Intrinsically Motivated. So I guess we'll just start over again, though, with tell me a little bit about what it is that drew you to this work originally and what it is that, how it is that you found yourself, I guess, working here in that place.
So, yeah, I graduated from Radford with a degree in history and a degree in political science. When I graduated in 2012, it was during the Great Recession, and there weren't very many job opportunities then. So my options were really limited, to be frank. It was either work here, work at a jail, or work at Napa Auto Parts. And I was fortunate enough to get an interview here. I was very fortunate to have, as where it is, a lot of nepotism in Southwest Virginia. And I knew my mother-in-law was a clerk here at the court, and she knew Mr. Weaver, who is our probation officer, and she connected us, and I was able to get my resume in front of him, and he helped me get this job here. And so that's kind of how I fell into it. There wasn't like any real desire for me to start and work in probation or pretrial services. I wish that I could say that it's something that I had thought about my entire life, but it's frankly, it's just been the last 10 years that it's came to light.
Right. And so we were talking about this right just before. So what was it you thought you were going to go into? What was it that you got your degree in, that sort of thing?
Yeah. So, I had originally planned to be in history and political science. I wanted to work at a museum. I'd volunteered at the museum in Radford where I graduated, and I was very hopeful to come back home and do the same thing, to work in a museum here. But unfortunately, during the Great Recession, there were no jobs, especially jobs for someone to work in a museum. Those jobs were kind of like once in a lifetime, apparently, as I found out. So it was a bit of a trial, but it was something that actually turned out to be one of the better things that's happened. So I was very fortunate to go through that misfortune.
Right. And you said it was you just had this passion for history, and the culture around here kind of leaned into, you said, caring about politics.
Yeah. So that, I'm sorry. So,
no, you're fine.
What we were talking about earlier, that like originally with my background in history, like it was something that people, the men here especially, were constantly talking about. It was like all about history. It was all about political science. I remember so much of my early life being just hearing adults talk about history and political science. So I thought that when I grew up, that that's what I was interested in. That's what I wanted to go into, because that's what everyone says. It's like, go do the thing you want to do. So that's what I went and got the degree in. And but like you were saying, it is interesting. I had never put it together myself, but to make that connection between like thinking about the people here and actually getting the degree that links me back to the people here, I think is.
It's like you know now the people that you're serving,
right?
Because they're the ones that kind of shaped you. I'm recording on my phone for me now. You're good. Because now your original motivation was, this is what everybody around here talks about. And so now you're super well-versed, I feel like, to kind of work with the folks that are going to be the people that you're interacting with on any given day, that sort of thing like that. Do you feel like you have a connection with folks that you're, just because you are from this area, does that help you be more effective at your job, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think that what I've learned is that for most of people in Virginia, Virginia stops at Roanoke. And so like the people here are just like, we're like the people that West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, and North Carolina, and mostly Virginia don't want. So we're kind of like isolated in our own little Appalachian area. Really, like, I think it's easier to identify more as Appalachian than it is as Virginian for the most part.
Right. Yeah. Appalachia. We talk about this all the time in our circles, that Appalachians are a people group all to themselves. Yes. You know, they kind of have this unique gathering of lots of different people, but they all kind of come from the same place. So tell me a little bit about, so you work pretrial diversion,
yes,
right? So tell me, what is pretrial diversion? What are the things that you're kind of tasked with?
So so I have to say it's pretrial services because okay, I got in trouble for saying pretrial diversion because diversion is like a punish or it's a part of a sentence. So okay. We couldn't apply that.
So pretrial
services. Yes.
Okay.
So what we do, and I know it's a semantics,
but no, that matters.
Yeah. So it's, so what I do is, we would go into the jail for someone that is being held in incarceration right now. Say like, say I get arrested for a DUI. I go into the jail. I can't afford the bond that I have. So someone like me comes into the jail and does an interview with that person. We get some information, background, and we do a risk assessment on that person to see what is their risk should they be released on bond. So we submit that to the court, and the court, it looks at it and hopefully lowers the person's bond to make it more affordable. So like in a nutshell, what we try and do at that stage is to keep people from being incarcerated because they can't afford their bond. Like that it's kind of silly for someone. And there are a lot of people that can't afford $150 to bond out. So that's partly what we do is to try and limit overcrowding in the jail and reduce as much time as people spend there as possible. I've seen that anytime you spend more than 4 days in incarceration, it's considered a traumatic event. So like as quickly as we can get people out of incarceration, I think the better off, especially people that we serve in pretrial services, which are not guilty of anything, are effectively serving sentences for charges that they may not even get a sentence on. So it's very important that we get those people out of incarceration.
Until they've had the opportunity to kind of work through all of the steps that come.
Yeah. Yeah. Until justice says your punishment is that you'll be going to jail for this amount of time or nothing, you know, like,
right.
And back into the community is the other part because you're not being part of your family and part of what you need to be doing to make the community a better place. You're losing all of that potential when you're incarcerated.
Right.
So that's part of what we do is to help people get out. And then while they're out, we ensure that they show back up to court. That's the other part of this is we recommend you get released, but the caveat, the catch to that is that we would also have you sent to us and we make sure you show back up to court.
Answer my phone call when I call you next time.
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I guess you're more trying to make sure that that individual is kind of walking through all the steps they need. Do you connect people with other services or things that they may need while they're kind of in that limbo place or?
Yeah. So we actually do. We work a lot with Mount Rogers Community Service Board and there are our local mental health services. They actually have a program specifically for people that are on bond. It's the Intercept 2 program. And so we do recommend a lot of people to that program. And they help people connect with mental health treatment, any kind of medical treatment, but specifically mental health treatment. And it's been a lifesaver, really, because so many people come through here. Like 99% of the people come through here need mental health assistance. And it's such a great relief to have to be like, okay, you can go speak with Ms. Delp and she can help you with that. I think it's one of the bigger and better tools that we've ever had, to be frank, in Smith County.
Right. So I guess tell me a little bit about, and again, I don't need you to tell me about individuals necessarily, but just tell me about what it is, what are the situations that you often find yourself intervening when in with people's lives? I know you talked about, you used the example of if I get a DUI, is it a lot of drug and alcohol things that you find yourself working with the most? Or what is kind of the situation here in Smith County, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so a lot of it is narcotics charges. Like I would say 80% of what we see is narcotics, specifically methamphetamine is the drug of choice that we see come through here the most. And as far as intervention goes, a lot of it is just education. People, they don't know because they've never been exposed to what methamphetamine does and what it's like to come off methamphetamine and what the recovery process is like. And or to ask someone, why are you doing this to begin with? Like, what is the thing that made you decide to do methamphetamine for the first time? Because no one wakes up and is like, you know what, today I'm going to do meth. Like, that day is my day. Like, there's always a process before that that leads someone right to that. And so just not that we're here to counsel or, but like to at least show someone that like, hey, this, there's more to this than what you're giving it credit for. I think that that's, to my opinion, is mostly what we do is just show people that that's not actually a wall. It's a door that you can walk through. And I think that it's a lot of it is just education.
And getting people connected to the right
folks, that sort
of thing to help me out. It's very cool. So you're obviously, we're recording this here, we're here in Marion, but Smith County's bigger than just Marion. Do you work with everybody in the whole county? Because I know we've done work as far in this, we've been in Saltville at different points, and that's, so do you have kind of responsibility for that whole area, or are you really focused primarily like locally here?
Yeah, so obviously our office is in Marion, and we do serve the entirety of Smith County. Our agency services all of Southwest Virginia.
Okay.
But I do specifically Smith County, and it's more geographic. So, like, there are people that live in Saltville that actually it's easier for them to get to the Washington County office than it is to get to our office, just because of.
So it is connected in that regard. Like, you can kind of go with everybody, but your response.
So, yeah, like our agency, I guess, as a whole is responsible, but like each of us is responsible for the people that are assigned.
So how do you feel, and this is more just because we're trying to understand the people of Southwest Virginia. You know, like you talked about how Appalachian people don't necessarily feel connected to Virginia, but they might feel connected to kind of the region more than anything. And one of the things that we're trying to do is better understand, you know, some of these little towns and things like that we get to interact with. Do you feel like there's a disconnect between the people that you can interact with in Marion and the people that you interact with, say, in Saltville, that's a little bit further outside of kind of the main hub where all the services are? Or how do you think the culture changes the further away you kind of get from kind of this central place? And what does that look like in your work?
Yeah, so I agree with that. I think that it is almost tribal, town to town to town, like that people in Smith County, or excuse me, people in Marion are different from the people in Chihuahua, which are different from the people in Saltville, which is so weird to me because it's like 15 miles difference. But, and you wouldn't think it's that big of a deal, but even like our part of Southwest Virginia, Interstate 81 goes through, but the further you move north from 81, the further people change even further. And I don't know, I've never really lived anywhere else, so I couldn't speak to like, maybe that's the way it is everywhere. But
right.
Like, to me, that it's just everyone in every little community is different to an extent, but as an Appalachian, I think that we all carry certain traits that, like, we're very self-sufficient. So, like, if you bring a problem, like addiction, like, we can do that. Like, I handle everything. I'm my one person that's supposed to solve all the problems. So, like, I'm not going to ask someone for help. I'm not going to go seek treatment because that's not how we do things here. We handle it ourselves.
So how does that kind of I can take care of myself attitude bleed into when, say, you approach somebody and say, hey, I want to help you bonding out or something like that? Do you kind of ever face pushback as people are, oh, I don't need your help, I can take care of this myself? Or how do you navigate that kind of thing?
Yeah, so we don't, I mean, in the jail, people are, I mean, they'll do anything to get out. So it's not like we don't.
They're happier to see you once you're here.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So on the outside, it's different, but people believe that they can stop the addiction themselves, like they can stop anytime they want, or that there's no mental health component to it. It's just, I do this thing because it makes me happy and that's it. And I can stop anytime I want. And I think that there's so many people that want to stop that don't know how, but they just, it's hard. It's hard to fight someone when you're fighting them on so many different fronts. So as far as the resistance, there is a lot of resistance because people don't want my help. They don't want to talk to a counselor. And there's so much stigma still yet with getting help and speaking, because here it's not as much now, but everybody used to know everybody. And so, like, if you came into the office and said this thing, there's the expectation that I'm going to tell someone that's going to tell someone and tell someone. And then by the end of the day, your mom's going to know what you
everybody
said.
Knows. Yes. Yeah.
So I don't think, and I think social media compounds that a little bit, but it's not like that anymore, which is weird. Smith County has grown so much.
And the more, it's like the more we have access to communicate, it's like the less we communicate person to person, that sort of thing. It's a lot less personal and more technology driven or whatever, you know, like you're saying with the rise of social media, it's like you'd think that would connect us more, but it doesn't necessarily connect us more.
No, not at all, which is so strange.
Yeah. So as you're kind of helping people find different services, that sort of thing, are there any, because obviously we're coming from a faith-based perspective where we're trying to get, like our mission is we're trying to motivate and equip churches to help respond to people that are struggling with addiction. And obviously you're saying 80% of the, you know, cases that you interact with are going to be drug-related in some way. Mm-hmm. And probably that other 20% are still probably connected in some way too. Maybe that's not the specific charge or whatever. But are there any faith-based organizations that you find yourself working with, or people find their way into as you're kind of navigating getting people into different services or anything like that? Is there a presence of that in Smith County that you know of?
Yes. So there is a church in Atkins that does have a very limited housing for women that need to escape a situation. So they have very limited, that's the Hadassah House, that can help individuals who have experienced violence and have nowhere else to go. So that is a great resource that we have. They also are opening one for men. But as far as like, if you were to say like what, I honestly, like other than that, I'll right off the top of my head, I'm sorry, I couldn't say, you know.
And that, I mean, I'm sorry too, because that's the thing that we're trying to, you know, we're trying to address that. That's the thing that we want to see kind of remedied, because, you know, we think that there's a lot more opportunity for the church to be doing a whole lot more than they already are. And so, and it's interesting, you said there's this program, and you kind of already answered my next question without answering it, because my question was going to be how much of the services that maybe the faith community is offering up here are individual church members helping people, or is it just there's a program and the church kind of funds it or supports it? Because that's a lot more of what we see is churches are much more apt to, we'll put some money into this or whatever, but I'm not going to go.
Sure.
And that's the thing, is like we really want to see people connecting with humans, kind of going back to what we were just talking about. It's like having people have opportunities to really, you know, interact with another human face to face. We think it's where people are going to actually find the healing.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. So it's interesting that you say there's not a lot of that you're aware of in your work, because that's what we would like to kind of help develop. How do you think there would be a desire to have more churches, more individuals, that sort of thing, ready to help serve people as you're helping them bond out or whatever it is, you know, get them to some place or whatever? Do you think there's a need, and do you think that could work here in Smith County and Marion?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, I don't want to speak for everyone, but my assumption would be that most of us, the groundwork is laid for the church. Like most of us here have at least been to like Vacation Bible School at least once. Like each of us are within so many miles of a church. And I think that there is a huge need for community. Like there are so many people that enter into recovery but have nowhere else to go. Like their family continues to use, or people inside the home continue to use. And so like there is no safe place for them. And I think that there is a desperate need for somewhere for people in recovery to have people that would be supportive of them, because I mean, like, what's the incentive to make the change if it doesn't matter? No one else is changing around you, and
right,
your ceiling's still just as high as it was before. It's kind of frustrating, honestly, to see someone do so much and put so much work into it, and then just immediately have nowhere to go, nothing
right
to do.
And that's what we're hoping to see. And we don't. And this is the interesting thing that we find ourselves navigating, is because like we see this as a need, but we also know we can't just, hey, these folks from Northeast Tennessee rode into town and told us to do things. Like you said, there's a lot of an attitude of we're strong, independent people that can take care of ourselves. We don't need you to come. And so we want that. And this is why these kinds of conversations for me in particular are so helpful, is because I'm trying to understand, you know, how does the culture here, how do the people work, and what's going to be the best way that we can be most supportive of helping, you know, raise up, you know, kind of an army of church volunteers to do this.
Sure.
And it's not easy sledding, because like you said, there is a lot of stigma still involved. And I think that, you know, stigma from the church toward people that are struggling with addiction or whatever, but also people that have been a part of the church and are now stigmatized against, you know, bad experiences they've had with the church in the past. And so we're kind of fighting the battle from both ends and trying to figure out a way to get these two groups to kind of, you know, interact together. I think is going to be, if we pull it off, it's going to be amazing. But up to this point, it really is a very difficult task that we're trying to do. So to hear you saying, you know, I think the atmosphere is ripe for developing this,
yeah,
would be great. And hopefully the church starts to hear this and is ready to kind of step in and respond in some sort of meaningful way. What are ways that you think, if the church wanted to say, we want to be involved in helping you help the folks that, you know, are waiting on their trial or waiting on whatever it is, what are ways that you think people could most easily help support some of the work that you all are doing?
Yeah, so transportation is a huge issue because Smith County is so rural. There is transport, like there is the Lynx Transit, but it's like you have to be on the street at 10:15 a.m. and then you have to be on another street at 4:55, and then you're not going to get home until 11:45, and it only runs once every fourth Wednesday, and it's just like really convoluted and complicated, and people can't schedule around that. You can't get someone to ever show up. I mean, like, and especially for court, like there's no way that you're going to get your court set in such a way that this transit's going to get you there on time. Right. So transportation and then housing, like, and I'm sure that it's everywhere, but like, there's so many people here that are homeless. I mean, there's a huge homeless population over here by the river and or people that are like floating in between homes that are like, I'm staying here for a few days and I'm going to go here and there. And there's just nowhere for anyone to go. And then, again, with community, there's nothing to do once you do have somewhere to stay. There's, you know,
then you don't have the people around you, that sort of thing. Well, I'm glad to hear you say transportation, because that's really what kind of got us started. Was what if church members just gave rides to people that A, got to the place they need to go, and court appointments was one of the original points that we were trying to make, because we're down in Johnson City, and all of the major like social services for people that are struggling with addiction or homelessness are all in downtown Johnson City. But the courthouse is in Washington. The Washington County Courthouse is in Jonesboro. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, there was no bus that ran between, you know, and now I think there might be one, but it's like once a day. It's the same thing you're saying. It's like, if you're gonna make your court appointment, you basically have to give up a whole day's worth of work and a whole day's worth of being around your family or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And so having folks be willing to just give somebody a ride from one place to another, A, it's going to help get them out of this cycle, this place that they're stuck in. But also, there's lots of community building and conversation that happens along the way as you're doing that sort of thing. And so that's what we're really excited to see. And it's not nice to hear that that same problem is happening here, but it confirms that this really is a simple task that we're asking for churches to maybe get involved in. Yes, it's going to take time, and yes, you're going to have to, you know, meet people that you didn't already know and that sort of thing, and that sometimes makes people feel uncomfortable. But it's one of those. I don't know what's your caseload look. I could have asked you this earlier. What's your caseload look like on any given week? How many people do you find yourself interacting with?
So, I mean, like in a week, I would say like 20 to 30 is kind of average.
But that's 20 to 30 people that you could start to build some community for right away. And that doesn't seem like a big number, but that's also a huge number. And it's going to take a lot of people to help meet needs for 20 to 30 people. And so we have to start somewhere though. And it sounds like this would be like these kinds of opportunities are the things that we're trying to encourage churches to kind of step in.
Yeah.
So I guess I want to pivot just a little bit, because we've talked a lot about the faith community, and you already kind of alluded to the fact that you feel like in Virginia it stops at Roanoke. For us in Tennessee, it's like Tennessee stops in Knoxville a lot of times. So it's kind of that same mentality. Once you kind of start getting into the mountain areas, it's easy to kind of lose sight of the folks and the needs that are there. But do you think Southwest Virginia, specifically government-wise, do they respond well to the problems that y'all are trying to help address and that sort of thing? Is the local government bought into trying to help people in the same way that they ought to be, I guess, would be from your perspective?
Yeah, I would hesitate to say, like, this is what the government's doing. I mean, like,
right.
I mean, from my perspective, it seems it's more beneficial to lock someone up than it is to help them with the problem that they have right now. Out of sight, out of mind is usually, I mean, like, and I don't mean to say that that's what the government's official position is, but I think that
that's the way the process often seems to play out.
Yeah, it's very frustrating, and that's why the cycles continue, is because we're not actually addressing the issue. We're just going to put someone in timeout and then hope that that fixes the problem. But they're building people in our community, our neighbors, that we could, like you say, we could just give them a ride and help them get where they need to do and do the thing. Instead, we're putting them in a community of people from all over Southwest Virginia, or gang members like the Aryan Brotherhood that like run a lot of things and have a strong presence inside the jail. Like, those are, it's kind of ludicrous to me when I think of like, what are we doing?
Right. So I guess we've talked about some of the issues and things, but obviously, I think there's going to be some success stories that are coming out of the work that you're getting to do. What are the things that you've seen be most successful in people's lives, or maybe what's helped people seem to be the most consistent once they've kind of, once you've kind of helped them navigate some of the steps, and then they get to their trial, or maybe they end up serving time, maybe they don't. What have been some of the things that have been most consistent in helping people kind of live consistently out after that time?
So you mean to like continue on the path that they're.
Yeah. So, I mean, so you're obviously trying to help intervene in some way.
Sure.
So as you do that, are there any kind of success stories that you would hang your hat on and say, the work that I'm getting to do, the work that we're getting to do in this program helped this person, and I can kind of say, these are the things that we were able to connect them with that were the most successful for them, or anything like that?
Yeah. Yeah. So I try not to, like, because it's the people that come through, it's their parade. I'm just the person that's kind of marching in it. And so, like, for me to say, like, oh, I helped you do this thing, I feel like it's me stealing thunder from them, because I essentially have no power in this relationship. Like, anything that happens on the other side of the desk. Like, I'm not taking people to raise or taking them home. So I think that, like, I think it's a beautiful thing to see someone find their place in their community, to re-enter their child's life, or to get their children back, or to like mend that bridge that they burnt a long time ago with their parents, to like start to see them heal these generational problems, I think is one of the more beautiful things that I've seen. But to say, like, I would hesitate to, like, you know, I did this thing and I'm so, like, I don't feel like it's my place to.
You don't want to brag on yourself. I get that. Yeah, I think that's kind of what are the things that you've seen work in people's lives that for the people that do seem to do well after? What have been kind of those hallmarks?
Yeah, I think, like, again, trauma. It's like addressing the mental health issues that are more than likely the reason that someone started to cope with, like, they used it to cope with the problem to begin with. Like, getting someone connected with a professional that's going to help them address this trauma and develop tools to work through it, it is. To me, and like to see them finish that journey almost, or to not finish, but to get in such a better place when they leave here than to come, you know, like it's, I think is maybe is that.
Yeah. Yeah. Any of that. It all kind of seems like you're saying a lot of the same things that we say, and you're getting to it from a different place. But our whole point is you still need human connection. You need the people. And it sounds like if we can get people connected to people, that's where we really see people thriving. And it seems like that's where, like, you're seeing, like you said, restoration with your family, restoration with your kids, those sorts of things. But also just having the right community and all that stuff wrapped around you is going to be what really helps people thrive after they're coming out of these sorts of things.
Yeah. And I think I've been listening to it yet, but one of your all's podcasts is about like ACEs. And I think that one of the big supports for ACEs is like having those two individuals in your life that are going to assist you and help lower your ACE score. I think that, like, part of what we do, like I said, when you're reconnecting people with like their family, like you start to redevelop those bonds between those two people that were there when you were a child, or you get to be the person that's going to be there for your child. I think that giving people a renewed sense of purpose and belonging is essential and a lot of times to healing.
You said everything that we say. This is so good. This
you're
is perfect.
Like the book.
You're gonna realize you probably already know the first three chapters of the book. It's basically what you just said. So I guess, as we're hopefully trying to build relationships with churches and faith community here in Smith County, what are some ways that we could help them navigate getting connected to maybe be more of a support system for folks that you're serving?
I think education, one of the things that I think you guys have talked about was like educating the people in this community. And it's so strange to me that we have such a problem with methamphetamine or opiates, and we don't know anything about them, like, or how they affect the brain or the body. And so, like, if you guys can address those issues of like educating, like, that these people aren't turning into zombies and monsters. They're still just our neighbors. They're your children and your grandchildren and your cousins. And like, it's not benefiting anyone to shun them. Like, you need to look at this as a sickness and an illness. Like, you wouldn't, like, if someone developed cancer, you wouldn't be like, oh my God, I can't be around this person anymore, and avoid them in the store. And like, it's not, I think a lot of it would go a long way to just speak with someone and show them that, like, these are still human beings and they're in great need of assistance. And I think that education would go a long way to help with that.
And then if we're able to get them educated and they want to give somebody a ride, Is there, can they just pull up at the courthouse and just hold up a sign and say, I'll give you a ride if you need one? Or is there a great, or is there like a way that they could actually get connected with what you all are doing so that you can have some folks that you could call on if people needed rides and that sort of thing?
Yeah. So I don't know about you might get calls on you if you're just hanging in front of the courthouse trying to pick people
that's
up.
That's probably not the best way.
Yeah. But certainly. I mean, there's no infrastructure for anything because we just frankly, we don't have anything like that. Yeah.
Right. We're trying to create a new industry. That's what we're trying to do. But I just wonder, is there space within what you all do that if all of a sudden we had a motivated and equipped church here in Marion that said, we want to help pick people up that need to get from somewhere to another. We've got 10 people. Mm-hmm. Can we just connect them with you? Can we connect them? Is there a way to do that?
I won't speak for our agency, but I hesitate to say that we can work hand in hand with a faith-based organization. I don't know the rules
right.
or something like that. So, but yeah, absolutely. There is a need for because essentially that's one of the things that Mount Rogers does with their Intercept program is they give people rides to and from to come see me or to go to see their, and the Medicaid cabs do the same thing, but Medicaid cabs obviously won't bring you here because there's nothing they can bill Medicaid for.
Right.
So
one of the other things that we've talk about with people is the idea of it's easy to, once you get involved in work like this, to really feel the weight of every single individual's story or situation, and it is easy to take it home with you. Do you face kind of a struggle with boundaries or how involved to be in people's lives? Are you able to kind of keep it kind of compartmentalized to your task when you're here? How do you manage?
Yeah, so it's taken a lot of work to get me to a place where I can manage it. When I first started here, you need something to hit me up on Messenger or send me a thing here or there. I was available all the time for people, and it's very easy for someone to come in and to speak about their trauma, and then it's a little bit sticky. So it sticks to you, and you take it home, and then you don't know how to get rid of it because it's all you can think about, and then you start to see it in other places and all the time, and it gets overwhelming, frankly. So it's taken a lot of work, and frankly to go to counseling, to learn how to do these things, because it's essential that we all take care of ourselves. I mean, I'm no different than anyone else here, and so I think that it's essential to learn the tools that you need to do the job that you have to do. And it's very hard. Now it's very easy. When the clock hits 4 o'clock, man, I'm this is it. I'm gonna go home. I'm gonna be with my son. That's my job now, is to. It is hard to, once you get invested, to let it go. But also it's once you figure out how, it's super easy and super, you can't do it. If you're taking it home with you every single day.
And it's important. You have to kind of manage that, or you're going to grind yourself into the ground, which is why you need support outside of this, so you don't feel like you have to be the 24-hour person as well, which is what the church ought to be doing. And that's what we're trying to get them to do.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Yeah. Well, that's all I had. So I'm super thankful that you wanted to hop on here and talk to us about it. I think I like to learn about what things are out there just for my education so that I can help connect people as I talk to different groups. But at the same time, I also like to confirm some things, especially about the way that the church is doing or not doing its job well in different instances. So this conversation has been super helpful for me. Any way that we can in the future, partner with what you guys are doing and try to get churches involved, we're gonna try to do it. Because we we're from Northeast Tennessee, but we've gotten really invested in what's going on. Because, like you said, we're the same people and we're all dealing with the same problems. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks.
This has been a podcast powered by Uplift Appalachia. To learn more, you can find us at upliftappalachia.org or at Uplift Appalachia on Instagram.